Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne. You know, there's nothing that makes a generation gap more visible than examining tastes in music. Have you been there? Tried to talk someone in another generation into seeing the supernal virtues of the music you like, and they just don't get it? But maybe it's gone the other way, too. Musical taste seems to be something just as unique as people are themselves. And if you've ever been in a situation where the music you like butts up against the music that someone else likes, you'll love this story from Bill Harley and the song that goes along with it. Here's Bill with Mom and the Radio on the Appleseed.
I want to sing a song about fighting over the car radio. My kids are grown now. I did what I could, and they're out there. But we used to get in the car and fight. So let's get in the car, argue, okay. It's a great place, little contained thing. Nobody can go out. You jump out of the car at 40 miles an hour. You just have to be with each other there in that little space for a little while. And we would fight over the car radio. Now, this is a little while ago, but some things are still kind of much the same. I realize in some cars today, everybody's got their own personal audio system, but there's still that possibility that you're having a community there in the car. You're all listening to the same thing, like maybe even this right now. And actually, we fought, but it wasn't our fault. It was the car's fault. It wasn't the car's fault. It was the dumb people who made the car. Because the people who made the car, they put the car radio in the front of the car where the people who pay for the car sit, which is as it should be, right? And that's where it belongs. So you get to turn it on if you paid for the car. You're probably driving or sitting in a passenger seat. And then you get to choose the stations. But the idiots who made the car, our car that we had, this thought it would be a great idea to put buttons in the back where the people who did not pay for the car sit so they could change the stations. What were they thinking that day on the design thing? Like, I got an idea, let's put it in the back. Oh, it'd be really great, you know? Give the children in the back control over things. And it's like, we do want them to have a control, but not quite yet. Some other later day. So here's what would happen. You know, I would get in the car and the kids would get in the back. I'd say, get in the back, put your belts on. They'd say, okay, Dad, like, whatever. And we get in the car and I would turn on the radio and I'd like jazz, and I would somehow, by accident, I would find a jazz station, you know, and it would be like this, you know. And go, dig a samba, sing a bata, bata, bata. I'd say, hey, stop that. And the kids in the back would be going, I'd say, stop it right now. Listen, I pay, this is my card and my radio. I pay for it, and I want to listen to stuff that I want to listen to, so stop it. And I turn it back where I went. Stop it, stop it, stop it. The kids would be going, I'll pull this car over. Well, okay, like that's an empty threat, right? Yeah, so have you ever done that? You pull the car over, and then what do? The kids are like, we're fine, Dad. You're the one that's in a hurry. It's like, all right, just stop it. Don't do it anymore. You know, and I got more and more desperate about, like, what can I do? I mean, you know, our car was a problem to begin with anyway. Like, because of that, and our kids didn't like our car because they'd lived in it for 7 years. And, you know, there was stuff on the carpet where, you know, like the dog had thrown up there, and he tried to clean it up, and the little wind, the little hand holders to open up the door, somebody just left a juice box in there, and it dripped in there and kind of dried, and you put your hands in there, and nothing would work, and I put the car in gear, and the car, you know, when it went into gear because of the bells, and we just drive down the street. And we'd be like three blocks from the school, and the kids would say, just let us out here, Dad. Just let out here. We're done. One day I was sitting in a car with my 14-year-old son. I was driving to someplace, just like, I can hardly wait till you get your license so I don't have to do this. And we pull up to this, to a light, and I'm sitting in like there's four lanes. I'm sitting in the left-hand lane, and the car is kind of squealing, and this car pulls up next to us, and it's really beautiful. It's like this candy apple red Miata sports car, and the top is down. It's shining, glistening in the sun, and there's a cloud over our car. There's rain falling on it. And the guy in the car is about my age, but he's just more put together. He's just, you know, he doesn't have any gray hair yet, and he has this like huge surround system, and the sound is just filling up the whole universe. And my 14-year-old son looks at him in that car, and he looks at me, and he like looks at the car like, Dad, look at the car. It's like, yeah, I see the car. And then he says, how come we don't have a car like that? And I said, because of you. Even he laughed. But anyway, I was so desperate about this radio that I actually looked in the owner's manual. You know, the owner's manual that's in the glove compartment? No one ever looks at the owner's manual. It's just sitting there in its little slipcover. It's never been looked at because it's filled with information that you don't need. You know, like page 7, the door. The door is located on the side of the car. To open the door, first locate the latch. See page 9. Stuff like that, right? So there's nothing that you really need to know. So I'm looking through it, but there, like on page 43, I get to the audio system and I discover something. It says back panel. To disable back panel, push buttons 1 and 3 simultaneously on the front panel, and the back panel will be overridden. And I think this is so beautiful. So I get in the car, I start the car, I turn on the radio, I push buttons 1 and 3, you know, and the kids, I said, come on guys, hurry up, get in the back, put your seats out. They're like, okay, Dad, whatever. And we're driving down the street, you know, and I said, I think I'll listen to some music. They go, okay, Dad, that is great. You listen to whatever you want to. I say, ha, ha, ha. And I turn on the radio, right, and it starts playing, you know. In the back are going, hey, Dad, Dad. I'm going, ha, 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 ha. So that's what this song is about. Every time I got somewhere to go, my mom and I fight about the radio. She wants her station, I want mine. She says, it's my car, tough luck, don't whine. DJ says these songs are solid gold, but everyone they play's about a million years old. One after another, on and on, and what makes it worse is my mom sings along. She sings along, and she sings, doo-wah-da-diddy, baby. My mom's music drives me crazy. To auto titty baby, but she don't care. I try to get her to listen to my favorite band. She says, that's just a bunch of noise that I cannot stand. She turns her radio back to where she wants it to be. Starts to sing along way off key. My mom sings off key.
Mom, stop it.
Please, I cry, 'cause everybody's looking at us as we drive by. She rolls down a window, she doesn't care. I sink down in the seat like I'm not there. I wish she wasn't there when she sings doo-wah-da-titty, baby. My mom's music drives me crazy. Doo-wah-da-titty, baby, but she don't care. I promise when I get older, I will not be so weird. I promise if I have kids, I won't make them want to disappear. The worst finally happened, I'm telling you all. I was in school last week, walking down the hall with my best friend. I started humming some tune, and he looks at me like I come from the moon. I said, what's the matter? He says, what do you mean, man? What's the matter with you? And suddenly I realized I was doing it too. Oh no, please help me, someone. I said, my mom's dumb songs are stuck in my head, and I'm singing doo-wah-da-ditty, baby. My mom's music drives me crazy. Doo-wah-da-ditty, baby, she don't care. Baby, my mom's music drives me crazy. Do what a ditty, baby, and she don't care. Thank you. Thank you.
That was Bill Harley with Mom and the Radio. And this story took me to a memory of my own that kind of surprised me. I was like anyone else, I guess, when I was a teenager. I liked the music I liked, and I didn't like the music that the generation above me liked, and thought the music of kids younger than me was silly, too. And one year, in my little town, an arts organization decided to do a kind of abbreviated production of the musical play You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, based on the misadventures of Charlie Brown and his pals from the comic strip by Charles Schulz. The comic strip ran for 50 years, from 1950 to the year 2000. And there, of course, were TV specials, a Charlie Brown Christmas, and other stuff. And there was this musical, too. I don't know if you've seen the show, but it kind of follows a Charlie Brown comic strip. Little vignettes about the Peanuts kids and about Snoopy the dog. And, of course, songs. And this small-town arts organization decided not to just do one production of the show, but three. One in which grown-ups played all the characters, one in which teenagers played all the characters, and one in which little kids played all the characters. And though these casts performed the shows all separately, we rehearsed them all together. We learned the songs all together. I played Charlie Brown in the teenager cast, and my brother played Linus. And there we were, making music right alongside grown-ups playing those same parts, and little kids playing those same parts, too. All of us, the grown-ups, the teenagers, the little kids, stumbling through learning music together and asking for help and singing badly before we got better at it. All of us, the grown-ups, the teenagers, and the little kids, helping each other through. Our general musical tastes in our regular lives might have divided us, but working on the same music together just bridged all those divisions, united us in a way that was really a blast. And our town loved it. After the performances that had been planned by the arts organization, people would sometimes round up the teenager cast or the adult cast or the little kid cast just for a lark to come sing Charlie Brown songs at a dinner party or a church activity or something like that. I mean, it went on all summer. And our town was small enough
that I'd see the grown-up Charlie Brown or the kids' Charlie Brown at the country store or at a school basketball game, and there would be a kind of special kinship between us, the Charlie Browns, you know? And maybe that sounds weird, but it's true. Working on something together had connected us. And after that, if the grown-up Charlie Brown or the kid Charlie Brown had wanted me to listen to some of the music they loved, I might just have given it a fairer shake than I would have before all that happened that summer. And that's where Bill's story took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along? Next up for us today, the Bay Area storyteller Willie Claflin, who takes generational conflict over music to a whole new level. You'll have to hear it to believe it. The story is called The Talent Show. Here's Willie.
So, talking about being old a minute ago, one of the things about being old, especially if you play the guitar, it gets harder usually when you hit 70 or 80 because your fingers kind of slow down, they get stiff, and sometimes you get arthritis, which is why a lot of famous guitarists just move to playing the piano when they get in their 70s. It's just, I can still play, not the way I could play 65 years ago, but I can still play now. So, in a way, this will be a perfect kind of round circle story because this is about learning to play the guitar in the first place. I grew up at a time when the favorite songs on the radio when I was like 7 or 8 years old were things like "Would You Like to Swing on a Star? Carry Moonbeams Home in a Jar." And the very next year, the number one song was "You Can Burn My House, Steal My Car, Drink." So rock and roll came along. And it came suddenly out of nowhere. And I was lying in my bed one night in Wolfboro, New Hampshire. In those days, you ought to listen to music after you were supposed to be in bed. Remember, there's no Wi-Fi, there's no cyber, there's no this, there's no that, there's no headphones, there's nothing. And even the radios are kind of big. So what I had to do was take the radio in my bedroom. We're talking around 1953 now, okay? You had to stick it under some pillows so the sound of the radio wouldn't get out loud enough for your parents to hear. You couldn't shut it down any other way. And I would love to listen to the radio late at night. And again, it was all kind of like, "I love those dear hearts and gentle people who live in my hometown." And all of a sudden I heard this, "The hound is around, Mr. Movin' is grooving." I thought, what is this? It doesn't sound anything at all like, it doesn't sound anything like, "They read the good book from Friday till Monday." It was like, "On the seventh hour, the seventh day." It was in. So my parents, the door comes busting open. My mother said, "What are you listening to?" I said, "I don't know, Mom." That was the beginning of rock and roll. And if you think your parents may be bothered by whatever the latest musical thing is, you can just imagine how radical a change it was from dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-da. Ah! Very, very sudden, okay? It's retro now, but it was very sudden back then. And I wanted to get a guitar. So my mom said, okay. She was very serious. She said, "A guitar is a musical instrument. If your father and I buy you a quality musical instrument, and we believe that in order for you to play the best possible music, it is important to have a good instrument, you will treat your instrument with respect." I said, sure, because I wanted to play rock and roll. Anyway, so I got a guitar for Christmas. This would have been seventh grade. But I didn't know how to play guitar, and I didn't even know how to tune the thing. And remember, there wasn't any internet. You couldn't tune. You couldn't find out how to tune anything. You could go to the library downtown, and you could get out a book on how to tune musical instruments, and you could read the book and try to figure it out, if you were a little bit cleverer than I was. But I never could quite tune the guitar properly, and then I didn't know what to play. And then I saw some chords, but when I pressed the chords down, it hurt my fingers. And I don't know what to do. I was discouraged, and my mom said, well, I was afraid this might happen. But Dr. Kennedy comes to town to sail his boat on the lake every summer. He's here for about 6 weeks, and he gives guitar lessons. He was a folk singer. He was a folk musician. I thought, folk music, whatever. But nevertheless, I could learn to play. And then whatever he taught me to play, I could just plug in. I had to play acoustic guitar my whole life. So he taught me this thing. Now, it's pretty complicated for a first guitar piece. It's this kind of finger-picking thing. It's called Freight Train. It's written by this woman named Elizabeth Cotton, who, interestingly enough, played the guitar left-handed and upside down without changing the strings. I don't know how she did it, but anyway. She wrote this thing called Freight Train, and that's what he taught me. It took me about 6 weeks to learn this thing. And then he went away back to Boston again, leaving me only able to play, which is fine. It's fine at first, and people would come over to the house and say, oh, that's really good. And I was in the eighth grade by now, and I thought, I am really good. Yeah, I sure am. Over and over again, everybody would show me off to their parents and their friends. But then, have you ever had a song that was like your favorite song, and you played it over and over and over and over again until at some point you've played it so much you don't ever want to hear it again? I don't know if that's happened to you, but that really happened with Freight Train. I was sick of listening to it. I was sick of playing it. I didn't know how to make up anything else. And I was playing it one day, and I just said, I hate you. And I thought, how can I wreck the song? And I thought, well, it's called Freight Train, so there must be a train wreck. There must be a way to derail the train. I thought, well, I could call it Freight Train Derailed. And he said, and these frets are kind of like rails, right? And I thought, well, how about if I just knocked it off the tracks? It's supposed to be played down here. But I suppose I knocked it off the tracks. How would it sound? Oh, I thought, that's awful. That's wonderful. So I called it Freight Train Derailed. And when my folks weren't home, I'd play this. And when I came home, of course, I treat my instrument properly because I knew my mother wouldn't like to hear. But this gave me an idea. I thought, well, that sounds awful, but I don't know how to make it sound good, but I bet I could find the most horrible sounds on the guitar if I just experimented for a while. And so I just experimented until I found this chord. I was really pleased with that one. And this one. And this, I didn't know which was my favorite. Probably this. But anyway, I would use my finger picking and I'd play ugly music. And after a few days of doing this, I thought, this kind of needs a singing part. Look at you, I thought, well, you could go, ah, 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 ah. So I would sit in my room going, ah, ah. My musical education, I can't do that for too long. And then, so I would play this in my garage, and a couple of friends came over, and they said, oh, that's great. And kids started coming over to hear me play awful music. And then Richie was a good friend of mine. He's a school drummer. He was a really good drummer. And he said, oh, I play ugly music too. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I play nice music because I'm, you know. But he said, he was one of those kids that got angry, but he didn't. He was a nice kid. He didn't know how to deal with his frustrations. He'd gotten two little wooden baseball bats when he was like 2 years old, your little miniature baseball bats, and he had metal trash cans out in his garage. And so after school, in the eighth grade, he would take his little baseball bats and he would whang on the metal trash cans. I mean, unbelievable amount of noise. And so I went over to his place and we would play duets. I would go, ah! And he would... the trash can. So he became like this eighth grade cult item in the fall. You know, we got sort of eight or nine, you know, groupies and followers and everything, and they would come over and shriek along. It was delightful. And finally, we got a third member who was a very, very skinny kid. I wish I could remember his name. But he had bought at a yard sale for a couple bucks this old warped guitar. It had four strings, and he never did anything other than pretend he was playing it. But it turned out once he'd heard ugly music, he decided that he really wanted to join the band. And he said, well, here's what I could do. He said, I could just move my finger up like this, far, and I could shriek. And so this is was his part was like this. It was kind of like he was the lead guitarist, you know. And I was kind of like the rhythm guitarist. And then there was the trash cans. And we called ourselves the Piney Woods Trio. Now, I would have completely forgotten about this, But late in the fall, the principal came around to the eighth grade, and he said, and I know that the eighth grade, I had a talent show in the middle of February, long New England winters, everybody gets depressed. Every grade would submit a talent to the talent show. You know, the kindergartners would do a flower dance, maybe, and the first graders would recite, I think that I shall never see a poem as lovely as a tree, or whatever. And then there was a girl who was brilliant playing the violin, whatever grade she was in. And then the principal's son played very mediocre trombone, but he was the principal's son, so he'd always be there, too. And up, and but the eighth grade never participated. And our principal said, I know you think you're too cool to participate in this school activity, but certainly would be nice in terms of a community event if you decide to participate this year. Because we always voted on it, and we always voted it down, because all the boys voted against it, of course. And enough girls to majority rules. So Richie said, I dare you to, and an eighth grade boy says to another eighth grade boy, I dare you to. It's very hard not to do what you're dared. It's a shameful fact, but true. He said, I dare you to go to Mr. Nason's office and you tell him that we want to be in the talent show. I said, that's a ridiculous idea. He said, I dare you. I said, they're gonna hate it. He said, no, they won't. The kids love it. I said, the kids love it. The parents aren't going to like it. The principal and teachers aren't going to like it. And we go on last anyway. He said, well, I'll close the show. yeah, I guess he sure will close the show. So I was terrified, but I went down to Mr. Nason's office and I said, sir, yes, Mr. Claflin, we decided that we would like to enter our trio in the talent show. And he said, it is extremely gratifying to hear this, Mr. Claflin. It seems that the adolescent boys think that they're somehow too cool to participate in a community-building all-school experience, and by participating, you boys will be kind of like a role model. And when he said, we'll be kind of like a role model, I thought, oh, no. And that was my chance to say, I have a headache, or I made a mistake, but I didn't. And the days got closer and closer and closer to the talent show, and I got more and more and more freaked out because I had no idea what was going to happen. Well, the talent show came around, and the kindergartners did their little dance of the flowers, and the first graders recited a poem, and you know, after the fourth grade bad trombone solo by the boy, they had cookies and donuts. And then finally, it inexorably came down to the Piney Woods Trio. And I walked out on stage, but people were happy. They all knew I was the guy that played. They did not know I played anything else. They were so pleased that some real eighth grade talent was coming in. But I think when Richie dragged the trash cans out on stage, there was this kind of ripple of apprehension that went through the audience. And then the skinny kid came out. And I remember Mr. Nason said, what selection will you be offering? I said, Moonlight on the Snow? So it sounds like an excellent choice. So we played Moonlight on the Snow, and you already know how Moonlight on the Snow goes. And I tell you, kids, I have never seen so many different reactions from one audience in my life. The kindergartners are there, and they're like... most of the kids were laughing, and some of them knew not to laugh really out loud. They were kind of going... looking in both directions of the adults to see if laughing was permissible. And then the adults, they divided into three categories. A third of them were like the kindergartners. They could not believe they were listening to it, and yet there it was. They didn't know how to process. Another third of the adults were laughing, but the third of the adults that counted, the principals, the teachers, the coach, everybody, were sitting there like this. I don't know if you know this adult expression, but it's kind of, let's see if I can do this. That means I hold all the power in the universe. I will inflict upon you a punishment so humiliating you'll wish you'd never been born. But keep on going as long as you want, because the longer you go, the worse the punishment will be. So, I couldn't see where my folks were. Maybe they were hiding under their chair. Afterwards, my father, it was one of the nicest things he ever did. He said, "Son, we'll pretend this never happened." And we did. It was lovely. Mr. Nason did not forget that it had ever happened. I had to go down to his office. I said, "Mr. Claflin, was that supposed to be funny?" Now, that's one of those grown-up questions. At least it was in my day. Was that supposed to be funny? Okay, the only possible answer is, well, yes, right? Otherwise, why would I have done it? But for some reason, I knew that the response I was supposed to give the adult was, "No, sir." So, "No, sir." He said, "Well, you certainly don't think it's funny now, do you?" I mean, no. Oh, no. He said, "Well, you will have a chance to apologize to the whole school community. We're going to have an assembly next week. You will stand up and you will apologize to everyone, and I'm inviting the parents. We'll apologize for ruining the midwinter event." Well, there it was. The assembly came around, and everybody, the parents were really nice. They didn't come. I was really happy that no one accepted the invitation. And I said my little thing. You know, I feel like a prisoner of war. I really regret my arrogance and my selfishness and ruining the all-school event with inappropriate material. And all the serious adults were fine. And they didn't notice the kids who were going, and that basically was the end of that. But I guess what I have learned from all that is that if you really have a hard time, if you really want to play music and study music, and you have a hard time making it sound really good, you have an option. Ah! Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
That was Willie Claflin with The Talent Show. Have you ever fought over music with your parents or your friends or your siblings? Have you ever bonded with someone over a piece of music that you both love? If someone listened to your playlist, what might they come to know about you? If you play an instrument, do you remember some of the memories from when you first started learning? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on the show. You can tag us on social media or send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. We want to thank Bill Harley and Willie Claflin for sharing their stories with us today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. Hearing people talk about their own faith traditions can help strengthen your faith. Learn more with Stephen Cap Perry on the BYU Radio podcast, In Good Faith, wherever you get your podcasts.